Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. I'd like to give a quick shout out here before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find them on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, Geek Beard, and Scoop Faze for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And I also wanted to bring up that patron and friend of the show, Anomaly, is currently dealing with a lot of family issues right now with health-related issues. So myself and other content creators will be doing Lee EDH, on August 7th and 14th to be able to raise money to help them cover healthcare costs. So I'm not exactly sure what form that will take right now, but hopefully we'll be able to get some more information on that soon. I'd also like to mention that you can buy your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmats over at Inked Gaming. That is I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. Got two amazing versions, both the full color logo as well as the nice grayscale version. They both look awesome. They look kick-ass in person. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends. So again, you can go find your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That is I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. All right, so it's been a few weeks since I've been on the horn here, been on the mic, and it's been a odd time, I guess, but in the time away, I got a chance to go to the amazing Command Fest Bellevue event up in Bellevue, Washington a couple weeks ago, and let me tell you, that was one hell of an experience. I thoroughly loved it. It was 3 days of Commander, fun with friends, cosplaying, just the whole nine yards, and I did meet a whole bunch of awesome fellow creators and cosplayers, and I'd like to introduce one of them now to the show. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the guest for today's episode on her very first appearance, Giraffinet. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So yeah, Nat, before we get started here, do you want to give a quick shout out to all the Twitch streaming and all the content that you create?
Yeah, so I'm Nat, Giraffinet. You can find me on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, TikTok, all of the socials. I mainly stream on Twitch. I stream weekly EDH. I'm starting a YouTube series soon with Planeswalkers as Commanders as a deck building series. And shortly we'll be on a few D&D streams, and you can also frequently see me on other people's Twitch streams as well during the week.
Planeswalkers as Commanders, that's definitely something that I think has been overlooked. So it's an interesting series you got going there, coming up.
Yeah, and I'm trying to build them not as you would expect, because I feel like a lot of those Planeswalkers have specific builds that people do for them, so I'm trying to think outside of the box to let people know that there are other ways you can build your decks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, that's kind of everything I do on my show, just with regular legendary creatures. So I really appreciate the attention to detail there for the Planeswalkers, too.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. I already have two Planeswalker decks myself, so I figured might as well just start building all the rest of them.
Yeah. But obviously the big victory is going to be when you build Tasha, the Witch Queen. I think that's really going to be like your crowning jewel, right? You know, no matter what cards go into it, it could just be like Tasha and 99 basic lands, and that would still be your calling card, I think.
Yeah, people have known me more recently for Tasha because I have a Tasha cosplay that I frequently appear as. So definitely known for that. I also am known to play Tasha's Hideous Laughter within a couple of my decks, so it just worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Also known as the bane of the existence if you're running a bunch of one and two drops too. It stings. So
yeah.
I've had the Hideous Laughter directed me more than a few times. Anywho, so yeah, speaking of the cosplay, just wanted to ask you your thoughts on Command Fest Bellevue and maybe some of the best memories, highlights that you had from the whole event.
Absolutely. So Command Fest Bellevue, was the first time I've specifically been to a Command Fest as a cosplayer. I had gone to Command Fest Philly earlier in the summer as a content creator, and I did dress up in cosplay, but I was the only cosplayer there, and it was kind of sad, honestly. So at Command Fest Bellevue, there were a bunch of cosplayers, so that just, like, I don't know, it sparked some enthusiasm because you see other people that love, you know, doing something that you love, and it's kind of like its own little community within the community. And it was a really cool thing to have so many people there just celebrating magic through cosplay. So,
oh yeah, we had a lot of the big named cosplayers who came out there. Obviously, just a name drop, a friend of the show, Zbex, was there. I've had her on my show before. Air Bubbles Cosplay was there, and Margaret was there as well. You, myself, and a couple, let's see, Corey Bowen from Wizards, Peachy Pop.
Chris Mooney.
Yeah, Chris Mooney and Peachy Pop Cosplay as well. So, yeah, just a really cool group of people, and I'm glad that I was able to also be involved with y'all doing my part of the cosplay. So, yeah, that was a really, I think that was definitely one of the biggest, if not the biggest highlight from Command Fest for me personally, and not just for cosplay, but just, like, for the entire event.
Yeah, I had so much fun with it, honestly. We did, like, a little cosplay meetup where we all, like, took pictures, and we gathered around the stage, and it was great. And then we did a cosplay Q&A panel, myself, Zbex, Air Bubbles, and Anna Margaret on Sunday. And that was really cool because we got to nerd out over over cosplay for an hour. So, yeah, anything related to cosplay at Bellevue was just absolutely great.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was actually my first Magic event going to as a cosplayer. I hadn't been to a Magic-specific event since GPs used to be a thing back in the before times, before COVID. And I remember thinking, you know, there's a couple of cosplayers here when I was there then. And, you know, this is something that I wanted to do for years, kind of going back into more of my teenage years. But I'd never gotten around to actually doing that. Then COVID changed the equation. I thought, well, you know, when conventions come back, I like Magic, and why not actually use this as an opportunity to get in the costume for once? And I think, though this wasn't my first time cosplaying at an event, I think it was better than when I went to DreamHack Dallas back in June, because this was Magic specific, and I think that really helped in compared to more just like a video game plus Magic plus a million other things kind of event that was in Dallas there. And that focus really helped. It really kind of gave us more of that sense of community, but also the fact that we've interacted with each other before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to meet people.
Yeah, I just wish more people would give the cosplaying a try. But, you know, it's I think it's kind of a tall ask in a way, is that I've mentioned this before, or maybe I haven't mentioned this before, but I mean, the barrier to entry in cosplay is not just the building of the costume, obviously the financial costs, but as Zbex and I discussed this a few months back, it's just getting started actually ends up being the biggest barrier to access that I found outside of the monetary, obviously, is that you have to be willing to go out, to step out of your comfort zone in a completely different way other than you potentially would look at it in a certain way. And you're going to be seen by a lot of people, and, you know, some people are just going to completely brush you off. You know, people keep calling me a pirate. I mean, this keeps happening, but it's worth it, at least for me, to see the faces of the people who, you know, want your picture, who were, obviously, when we had our cosplay meetup on the Saturday night there in Bellevue, you know, not many people were showing up to the stage, right, while we were doing the whole set of pictures, but it's only when, hey, this is your last chance to get a picture, you should have just seen, listeners, the number of people who just came out of the woodwork. They just ran from all parts of the convention center just to take our picture, and
that was crazy.
it was funny.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about this on our Q&A panel at Bellevue as well, talking about how, you know, starting cosplay can seem daunting, especially if, you know, you're wanting to do something that seems like it's larger scale. So we really talked about how a great stepping stone into that is closet cosplay, or you know how there's like Disney bounding? It would be similar to that, but like MTG bounding, where you're using stuff from your closet, stuff you find at the thrift store. And that's kind of a good segue, because you know it can be expensive, and it can be a lot of work to put together like a full-blown cosplay. It will take hours and hours and days and days, but you know, if you just like, I kind of want to look like Jace for this MTG event this weekend, maybe, you know, see what you have in your closet that's blue, that you can kind of make yourself into like a little like everyday Jace.
Kind of the more laid back, more like urban style Jace, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to match the character you're trying to portray, the exact picture you see. You can kind of make it your own. And that's kind of what makes cosplay unique in a way, is because, you know, if everybody did their costumes exactly the same, it would be cool, but you know, you don't have that sense of like, I built this myself and it looks awesome and it's really unique to me. So that's something I love about cosplay, is seeing how people like make cosplays into their own.
And just the wide variety of characters and cards that people have cosplayed. I mean, obviously, you and a lot of the major cosplayers do actual named characters from the universe. Obviously, legendary creatures, legendary characters. But again, myself and ZBEX, and sometimes anyway, among others, do actually come up with arts just from regular cards, too. So, I mean, you have the ability to just choose an art you like that you want to portray and just go out and try to copy that as best as you can, or as much as you want to, and just go from there.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to do it, and you just want to have fun with it, honestly. Like, if you're not having fun putting it together, if you're not having fun wearing it, then you know, That's not what cosplay's about. It's about having fun wearing what you're wearing and, you know, spreading happiness throughout the community. So,
yeah, for sure. A word of caution for anyone who is getting into cosplay, though, is make sure your costume is comfortable.
Yes.
Nat, I know you and I were talking about this on Saturday night after the cosplay meetup there, and if I recall correctly, I felt like I was in a sweatsuit in like a sauna and your feet were killing you. And it's just,
yeah,
you know, this is the price we pay as cosplayers. I'm wearing a flannel shirt indoors and it's 95 degrees outside. I mean, this is not smart in some ways, but in another way, it's totally worth it. But just, again, whatever you need to do to be comfortable, do it, because you're going to be on your feet, you know, 10, 12 hours at the con, standing, sitting, playing, interacting with people, and especially with certain costumes that they're heavy, you know? There are a lot of components that go into these, and you really have to think those through for your comfort. So, yeah, that right there, I think, is my biggest piece of advice for any to-be cosplayers out there. Just make sure your costume is comfortable. Make sure that you can imagine yourself standing, sitting, moving for 8 to 10 hours, and also so you can go to the bathroom. That's very important.
Yeah, it absolutely depends on what you're doing. If you just want to get like some photos and something for like a 1-2 hour photo shoot, you could probably go a little less comfortable. But definitely if you're going to like a big convention like Command Fest, definitely make sure you can wear it for hours. Along with that, it's great to have pieces that you can remove if you need to. So like, for example, I had these bracers that I had to take off to actually play Magic because it was like impossible to actually like shuffle cards and like move things around with my bracers on. So like I was able to take those off, and then like with the shoes, like after a little bit I could like change into some sandals and then like throw them back on later for like when we were doing photos. And then to also make sure to like take lots of breaks as well. You don't need to be on for those full 8 hours. Like, make sure like you're taking care of yourself while you're in cosplay. Make sure you're like hydrating extra if you're wearing a costume that makes you sweat more, for example. So, just listening to your body and making sure you're not overdoing yourself.
Yeah, and another thing that I do for my Tireless Tracker costume is I'm actually, instead of wearing regular boots, like you would find on some sort of craft site or just any specialized boots, I actually purchase gaiters, which go on over far more comfortable hiking boots. So I'm able to stand in hiking boots that, I could go out hiking, out walking in, and I'm wearing the gaiters over them. They're close enough. So yeah, you don't have to worry about authenticity and be creative, find some solutions. I mean, I completely understand your issue with the bracers there, because I wear fingerless gloves with my costume, and it's just, if you want difficulty shuffling, especially some of those Dragon Shield sleeves, try wearing fingerless gloves and doing that. It's crazy stuff. I did that, but yeah, it was difficult. So yeah, just be comfortable, but also don't be afraid to be out there. You want to be, personable. You want people to walk up to you and say, "Hey, can I get your photograph?" Because you're effectively a performer there in a way, but you're also getting that intrinsic value yourself, is that I am participating, I am part of a group. And yeah, the fact that we were kind of our own small little niche club, that was really awesome. It's like we've got something in common that no one else here has, or at least has thought of bringing. We've got something completely different. We've taken our fandom and cranked it to 11, and that's what cosplaying is for me.
Well, and it was great too, because at the Q&A panel on Sunday, we had a lot of people listening in on our conversations that were interested in getting into cosplay, just because they had seen all of us walking around in cosplay all weekend. So it's really cool to have those types of things at events, because it inspires others to kind of go into that realm as well. So I'm all for more cosplay events at events.
Definitely. So yeah, before we finish off with the cosplay segment here, I know I asked you this a little while back, but any potential new costumes you might be working on here that you are at liberty to tell us about?
I am almost done with Rowan, like so close. I just have to finish a couple armor pieces and then I'm done. My next two big projects, and one of them I posted about on Twitter earlier today, is it's gonna be a mix between the Voldoren Pariah and the Abolisher of Bloodlines, which is the Eldrazi vampire that has like 20 arms and has like mouths all over it. It's gonna be really creepy, but also really cool and really fun. I honestly love doing horror makeup. So I'm so excited for that one. And then my other one, a more well-known MTG character, is gonna be Derevi, and I'm gonna have these giant owl bird wings. And it's gonna be fantastic. It was my first commander deck that I built, so I'm excited to do that one because it's a little sentimental.
For sure, for sure. I mean, yeah, seeing that Voldoren Pariah would be very interesting. That's always kind of been a fun card, a pet card of mine for certain decks going back a couple of years. And seeing that brought to life, well, quite horrifying in some ways, would actually be really awesome.
I would have to be very like cautious about like where I'm cosplaying that, because of course I want to make sure I'm not like scaring off kids.
Oh yeah,
But I think it would be really fun to do and really cool to do. And I have a vampire themed cosplay shoot coming up here in a bit, so it fit that theme, so I decided to choose that for my cosplay.
Yeah, it reminds me that at some point here, and I did post on Twitter last week, is I guess at some point, now that I'm an established cosplayer, I'll probably have to get started on a second costume eventually. So still trying to figure out exactly how I do that, because again, and this is important for all the listeners out there, is I don't really know how to make my own materials here. Most of the costume was actually picked up piece by piece. So it's, you know, whether you craft your stuff or whether you have to buy it online like I did, I mean, as long as the you're happy with the final product, that's all that matters.
Cosplay is cosplay. It doesn't matter if you created it yourself, if you bought it from someone else, if you got it from your closet, if you thrifted it, you know, if you are in a costume pretending to be a character you love, you are cosplaying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the really important distinction here, is just find what works for you and go with that. What other costume could I wear? A flannel shirt and some cargo pants and some hiking boots and actually end up looking like a character from Magic the Gathering? Well, you know, just a little bit of willpower and, you know, the ability to kind of put those items together in my mind. Obviously, having the financial flexibility does help, especially mm-hmm. if you're going to take that route. But yeah, if you don't have the means, especially, just get creative. You know, do what you need to do to make sure that you feel satisfied. Ultimately, you could spend $1,000, $10,000, and if your costume just doesn't feel good on you and you chuck it, you know, then you're going to feel bad about it. But you can make a costume just out of the stuff in your closet and feel really good about it, and that's all that matters.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Yeah, so we've kind of flogged this one a little bit, so let's move on a little bit more. So in Bellevue, we got a whole bunch of games, and I think you and I got, what, two games in-ish?
Yeah.
It was really busy, and I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the whole idea of content creators just getting together and hanging out. I mean, we did have a space. Obviously, you as an invited content creator, you were at the content creator area, which is what, three long tables basically in the middle of the show floor, I guess, mm-hmm. is best how to say it. And obviously, all the creators, including myself, were hanging out there just all weekend playing games. I mean, how does it feel to you to be a creator in this kind of community where we're all so positive and trying to just interact and play with each other?
Yeah, it's interesting because the setup at Bellevue was a lot different than in Philly. In Philly, there were content creator showdowns where people could come play against the cosplayers, but content creators. But for the most part, we were mainly just playing in, like, the open area. Whereas in Bellevue, it was more like you could play, like, in the open area, but, you know, you were more so kind of supposed to hang out, like, in the content creator area. I think that so far the Command Fests I've been to picked great content creators that were positive and happy to play with people, and so that was, I mean, it was a good time, it was a good experience. It was interesting because it was a mix of like games but also like booths.
Mm-hmm.
So there were like games happening at the same time there were like booths where people like could come up and talk to the content creators. So it was just like a little interesting kind of area, I guess.
Yeah, so to elaborate a little bit more on what Nat's mentioning, obviously there were various creators who were also advertising their own personal brands who were there. Talia Vess was there, ZBex was doing that, a couple others were doing that. The Birds of Paradise, eight, I believe, who were able mm-hmm. to show, had their own table with the most shiny foil I've ever seen. yeah, out there playing games with fans, but also raising money for Trans Lifeline by playing Jumpstart as well, amongst other things, doing Double Masters drafts, et cetera, et cetera. And then also playing casual EDH and where Alan and Cyrus from Mental Misplay were, you know, general CDH. I got a couple of games in with those guys. So, yeah, it was just so much going on in that creator area. But all of us, mm-hmm. even when we weren't playing, we're just kind of hanging out there. I didn't really wander into the open play area all that much because I felt like, you know, just personally, it's kind of nice just to be a creator and hang out with other creators here and just jam games versus just kind of going out into the wild and just seeing what you'll get. It was different. Yeah.
Yes and no. I really liked that aspect about Philly where we got to play in the open play area because I felt like I met a lot more people that way, and I felt like it didn't feel as, not to say that it was divisive, but it didn't feel as like exclusive, I guess. It felt much more approachable for people to like just walk up and be like, hey, like, you want to play games? It's like, yeah, sure, we need two. So I did try to go over to the open area a little bit. The problem is the way the space was designed, the open area was so far from the content creator area. The content creator area was closer to the events, like the event tables that were happening.
Mm-hmm.
So people that were playing in drafts and sealed and boss monster or whatever else other events they were playing in. So it was kind of far away in that way. So it is really nice to hang out with content creators, but I also think it's really nice to like go out and play with, you know, new people and meet new people, especially, you know, like if it's their first time coming to an event and they came by themselves, and it might be intimidating for them to like walk over to the content creator tables. You know, so that way you make sure everybody is having a great time and having fun.
Yeah, definitely an interesting point to bring up there. That we did run into a lot of people who this was their first event at a Magic the Gathering convention, especially. And the ability for us as creators to be out there in the greater community was definitely felt. I mean, even though I did most of my games over in the creator area because I wanted to obviously play with all my friends who I've made online, every time I was playing with someone who wasn't kind of in our quote-unquote clique, if we want to even use that term, you know, it was definitely interesting just to kind of see the difference in just not just the games but also the interaction as well. And sometimes it was kind of nice to just be able to kind of take the creator hat off and play a game, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you're doing it for a full weekend. It's nice to, I mean, and you should always kind of be yourself, but it's also kind of nice just to, like, play a game, you know?
True. So, I know I will be doing an episode on this here real soon, but... yeah, just want to know what your favorite moment was from Command Fest Bellevue.
Oh, gosh. So many. Like, it's hard. Everything I participated in was great. The Survey Says games were really fun. I think events need to do more things like that because... it's not only fun for the people who are on stage participating, but like the audience as well. Like those were probably some of the most well-attended panels, so to speak, where the game show ones. And that was just, it was just a lot of fun because you got to like nerd out over Magic with a bunch of other people. But honestly, like, every part of the weekend was so much fun. Playing Sealed was fun. Like, I sat down at my tables, like, opened my packs, and everybody at my table was just, like, cracking jokes and having the best time. I loved that. And then, like, all of the cosplay events and the other panels that happened, it was just, like, the whole weekend was great. It's hard for me to pick one.
Hey, I mean, I definitely have a favorite in the cosplay gathering, but I do agree that, you know, after that, I don't know what the next best part would be. Yeah, it's a lot of really good stuff and something we really needed, just not just as players, but just as people. It's like, get out of town for a few days, play a whole bunch of Magic, don't worry about leaving the convention center, just play games and don't worry about it. It was fun.
Yeah. It's a great kind of just like way to escape for a weekend.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, we don't really have much coming up, and especially not right now. Now, October, November, there is some stuff coming up, but If Wizards is going to be releasing any information on other conventions, we have yet to hear about that. I think Vegas 30 may come out next week information, but I'm not sure.
It is supposed to come out on the 8th, which is Monday. So if they are saying it correctly, it should come out on the 8th, and tickets should go on sale on the 11th, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
But I have a little something. In November, there's an event called MTG Summit, which is taking place in Salt Lake City. And I don't know when this podcast goes out. I don't know if my
It's gonna be coming up tomorrow, the 5th of August here. So there's plenty of time.
Okay. I will be a special guest at MTG Summit.
Nice.
Yes, I will be there cosplaying for the weekend. So that's definitely an event to keep on your radar. It's going to be great. There's a lot of really awesome guests going and a lot of awesome events. It's not just, I mean, they have a Commander Arena, but they also have 5Ks for a bunch of different formats. It's going to be the pre-release event for Brothers War. So it's just, it's going to be a really fun time. So, just an event coming up that you might want to, y'all might want to keep on your radar.
Yeah. And the really cool thing about Summit, at least from what I know about it, is that Carlos and Kingdoms TV are really the driving forces behind that. And it's really awesome to be able to see fellow creators really be able to create a grassroots event, not just like a small event, but actually a full-sized event like this with all sorts, with everything you could imagine from a convention, the tournaments. You'll have the prize wall, the prize tickets. You have the creators, the artists, the cosplayers. Mm-hmm. You have the whole gamut there who are going to be going to an event that was ultimately started by fellow content creators. And I think that's really the big difference here between that and Magic 30, is that this is not the WotC saying, hey, we want to do this event in Salt Lake City. These are Magic players who said, yeah, we want to put this on. Who wants to come out? And honestly, just from the guest list I have seen and the artist list I've seen, and not even talking about just like all the creators, but just like the biggest names. I mean, you're gonna have Sheldon Menery there. I mean, it's crazy. There's so many people who are so influential in our community gonna be there, and it's just, oh my God, the lineup is stacked, and we still have what, 2 months to go, 3 months to go. So yeah, that. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There might be a couple more guests that they'll add, but for the most part, what you're seeing is pretty much the event, and they already have all the information up, so you can go on and check out all of that stuff.
Let's see. It's mtgsummit.com, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so as the listeners there, if you are able to potentially go to the event, go to mtgsummit.com and you can find all the information there. Obviously, $500 is a lot of money for the VIP experience, but it does look like they also have one and weekend long commander passes, if that's more your speed, for a lot less money. So again, you can just build the experience however you want to, and definitely make sure to have a lot of fun if you're able to be out in Salt Lake City come mid-November.
Absolutely. And Salt Lake City is a more affordable area for something like this. When I was looking at prices at, like, you know, lodging and stuff, it's definitely reasonable compared to, like, if it were in a bigger city like New York or...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was even cheaper than, you know, Bellevue or.
Yeah, that's honestly no surprise. No surprise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho, so yeah, now that we've really discussed about cosplay, we've discussed about content creation. Actually, it's kind of sort of. We talked about content creation. We've talked about the events. Just, you know, let's just talk about casual commander, right? No, that's
yeah.
why we're here. What are you playing most recently, and what do you want to talk to listeners about?
The most recent deck I put together is your standard Arcades Walls deck.
Mm-hmm.
I love that deck. It is an aggro deck for sure. You get walls out pretty quickly because they're pretty low CMC. The deck itself is pretty affordable because walls don't really cost that much. Because nobody's really playing walls unless you're playing Arcades. but other than that, I built a Lozon deck from the newest Baldur's Gate set, which is Blue-Red Dragons and Adventures. Mm-hmm. And then probably before that is Elminster, which is also Baldur's Gate. And that one is Scry Tribal with giant spells.
Okay, kind of running a bit of a miracle sub-theme there, yeah.
Yeah, so those are the decks I'm playing right now, mostly. I get boxes every set because I like to build decks from the cards that I get. So I'm definitely like your casual commander, let me see what I have in bulk, let's put it in a deck and have fun with it. So that was the latest. I mean, I didn't do anything really for Double Masters because it was mostly reprints.
Mm-hmm.
But Baldur's Gate, you know, I put together some decks there, so.
Yeah, so it sounds like you'd be really good at a Commander Boxing League in a way. It's like you already kind of do that.
Yeah, I like to use what I have. And I like to play things that people don't always see every time they play. You know, everyone's building the Miriam dragon decks. Everyone's building the Tasha.
That's you,
decks.
Alan. That is you. For building. Alan is so, so guilty of building Miriam, says the worm. I played against that at Bellevue. So.
Yeah, so I mean, you're seeing those everywhere right now. So I try to find things that are, you know, not as seen as much, but are still strong decks that you could play in optimized casual, or, you know, you don't have to play optimized every time. You could build a low cash deck if you want.
Yes, you could all join Battle Cruiser and play where I play most of the time, which is,
yes.
I mean, if you want jank, I've got jank for you in various flavors.
Yeah, and I feel like we need more of that because lately it's been, you know, how much can I optimize my decks, and they just get more powerful and more powerful. But you have to also understand that it's okay to just have like a janky deck that you have fun with, and encourage your friends to do that too, so that way you can all play janky decks together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that the listeners on my show here are probably tired of me mentioning it, but I think it bears mentioning. Nat, I'm not sure if you've heard of the Legend of Colorless Najeela, but that is one of the decks I do currently run.
I love that.
Yes, I also, and again, Anna Thornton, who was another one of the creators at Command Fest Bellevue, can attest, I've also built a silver-bordered old fogey deck that doesn't really so much run, but it's just fun. So, yeah, I really go to the bottom end of the power scale, if we want to say that, and, you know, try to find some really stupid stuff that I can do. So, yeah.
I think it's fun to build that way too, because then you find combos that maybe like no one else has ever found before, and then you feel cool because you're like, I discovered this combo. Because everyone knows like the major combos and, you know, the stuff you see on EDH Rec, but you know, if you're just building like from your own brain and from what you have in front of you, you might find something really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't be afraid to find a card that no one has ever heard of, and you know, make that your commander. I obviously make a living as a content creator. I mean, I don't make a living. Obviously, I'm not making really all that much money off of this. I've got a day job, but I love building commanders no one has ever heard of. I mean, or decks that no one has ever seen before. So that is my calling card personally. I love that style of play. I mean, I play CDH too, so I play powerful stuff all the time. But I just kind of love the silliness of the janky battlecruiser stuff too. So it just kind of depends on how I'm feeling on the day.
It's a great icebreaker too, because if you're playing with people you haven't met before, and you're like, oh, hey, like, I'm playing this commander, and they're all like, we've never heard of that. Like, what's it do? Like, what's your deck do? It kind of, like, gives them a little insight into, like, who you are and, like, your deck building process. And, like, it just makes for, like, interesting conversations, because then people see things that they haven't seen before.
For sure. Another story from Command Fest Bellevue is I did play, obviously, again, listeners know I love my Kothafed deck so much. That is my signature deck. That is the deck everyone seems to know me for. If you go on EDH Rec, my Demon Boy only has 61 decks to his name. So, you know, we're talking low end of the scale.
Yeah.
And yeah, I actually defeated both Joey Schultz from EDH Rec and Daquan Watson in the same game with that deck. So anyone who tells you that my commander sucks, you know, I won a game of EDH against two powerful creators. So in our format, two great beacons of hope and inspiration in this format. So it's like, just, you never know. Just give something silly a try, because you'll never know what kind of stories you'll get out of it.
Yeah, you try it. If it doesn't work and it's awful and you're not having fun, just take it apart.
Tear it apart.
Build something else.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like, you might as well try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really what I love most about building decks is I probably build more brew more decks than I actually end up playing. Again, thanks to Andy Fleury over the Guardian Project podcast for giving me the idea to keep track of my games. So I've been keeping track of every single game from 2021 as well as 2022, including every game from Command Fest Bellevue as well. And just trying to see how my decks are doing roughly, and also seeing which decks I end up reaching for most often and least often, because that kind of tells me I like playing this deck because I enjoy the deck, or I'm not playing the deck because, you know, maybe needs work, or I'm not playing the deck because I don't find it fun. And when I get to that third category, that's when I know, or I go to the question, do I take this deck apart and build something I actually want to build?
I love that you brought this up, because I love all of my decks. I reach for all of them. And the reason that is because I like to build my decks so that they don't play the same way every time I play them. I feel like people, similar with content creation or your jobs, you get burnt out if you're doing the same thing every time. So I try to build my decks in a way that, you know, there's a different interaction with different decks I play every time, so that way I'm never burnt out by my decks. The only deck I've ever, like, taken apart because I was not having fun with it was my Prosper deck. Mm-hmm. And it's because it does the same thing every time I played it. It was create a bunch of treasure, cast a bunch of spells. Like, it was the same thing. So now when I deck build, I just make sure that I'm building things that I can see myself playing long term, rather than something in the moment where I'm like, oh, this is really powerful, I'm going to play this, but there's really, like, only one linear way to play it.
Yep. I think you would actually really enjoy, like, a 35 minute brewing session with me sometime, because I would probably fill your head with, like, so much stupid stuff that you would never see brewing the same again. I know my friend, Mono Whiteboarder Peter out there, I know you're listening to this. This is for you, bud. This is for you. It's like you inspired me to start looking outside the box, and I've tried to spread the gospel of weird jank brewing, as well as you, J-Ro, out there. If you're listening, I know that, you know, we've kind of inspired each other. It's like, this is how I build, and I got it from somewhere, and then I try to spread the word of stupid brewing to other people sometimes.
Well, I hear all the time from people like, oh, like, I'm just really tired of all my decks right now, or, oh, you know, and I'm like, let me like deck brew with you. Like, let me give you some ideas. Like, what do you like? What do you enjoy? What do you want to do? If that is optimized, then I guess you're just gonna, or like CEDH, then you're gonna build CEDH games. But like, if you are interested in a bunch of different things, why not try to make a deck that can incorporate a couple of those things? And then you have options when you play the deck.
And honestly, even just the higher levels of our format, even CDH, there's so much
Yeah.
room for brewing cool stuff too. Like even my Godo deck, which is, turbo turn two, turn three wins, and it does that consistently.
Yeah.
Every game I play with it never really turns out the same because, I'm trying to do the same thing. It just depends on how I
Right.
get there. So I've put in
Right.
a whole lot of extra stuff that's not in the stock list. This is a CDH deck that has effectively been quote unquote solved. You see, I'm doing the scare quotes again. I do this a lot. Solved. But no, for my personal version is like, okay, can I throw in some interesting stacks pieces? Can I throw in some extra
Yeah.
removal? What can I do to try to make sure this deck is actually resilient, grinds out value in the mid game, and can win turn seven, turn eight? I mean, there's just things you can do even with the most quote unquote solved decks as well to just mess with them a little bit and make them more resilient in some ways. And they're still doing the thing, but you try something different. You never know what'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's something to be said about making your decks not flexible, but kind of, where you have different avenues of how your deck plays.
Yeah, I definitely have decks that I don't reach for anymore. I'm sorry, Adamia. You just sit underneath the closet cabinet
Oh.
there. It's like just you are not forgotten. She was actually my first legitimate commander. So it's like I still have her deck together, but I don't really reach for it all the time because I just never quite figure out exactly how to make it work the way I want to. But yeah, shout out to my first commander, my first legitimate, full really thought about this kind of commander. I did go back and talk about this on an episode a while back. It's like not my first commander ever, but certainly the first one where I really put a lot of thought and effort into, and I've since moved on, but I just don't have the heart to take that deck apart.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone has one of those decks, I think.
Yeah, I have way too many decks and not enough decks to play with, but I do try to play the ones I enjoy the most, obviously. So my Krark Prava deck, which I haven't played in a while, but as Cole, the Uncommon Commander guy, can attest to you that I did a whole episode on his podcast about that one. The deck doesn't win really, but it does a lot of stupid stuff. So I take that
Yeah.
as a victory anytime I play it. Plus, I just got this really stupid altar that I made out of some art by Beyond the Machina. Just some great fun stuff. Just, being able to plop that down and just having people kind of shake their head. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Exactly. That is exactly what I want you to think because I don't know what I'm doing. Can I win the game? No. But am I enjoying doing something stupid? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man, I love those kinds of stories, honestly. It's fun. Yeah. So yeah, looking out for the next couple of months here. What are you most excited about for Magic? And what do you really want to give a shout out to in particular? Or we kind of just look into 2023. Is there a new set that you're really interested in? Or I it's kind of hard to ask this question, right? Because there's so much
Right.
uncertainty about what's going to be happening in 2023 because we just don't know yet. So
Right.
what's exciting for what's shaking for the next couple of months here?
Dominaria, I think is gonna be awesome. There was a bunch of stuff leaked, which I'm not gonna talk about, but it should be definitely an interesting set. And Brothers War, honestly, like those two, I feel like are gonna be really strong sets. And I just like I cannot wait. Oh, plus the new Jumpstart set. I love Jumpstart. I love Jumpstart. So as a content creator, I'm a really big proponent of like trying to help new players like get into Magic and making ways more like making Magic more accessible to people. Jumpstart is great. Because literally, you just hand people two packets and you're like, there's your deck. We're gonna learn how to play it. Like, I love Jumpstart. So I'm excited that they're not only going to have a new fully Jumpstart set, but they're adding Jumpstart sets to every release as well, like every set release.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old Welcome decks used to be, or kind of a
Yeah.
Planeswalker deck-like product, but in a way, probably a little better because you can just crack open two packs of Jumpstart, or even one pack, honestly, if you have only one, and you can still play at roughly the same kitchen table level as. Because, I mean, otherwise, you would have had to buy two Planeswalker decks, and, that starts getting.
Right.
I mean, it's the same cost, roughly, but the idea is
Yeah.
it's going to play exactly the same way, but Jumpstart, it could be a boat. I mean, you honestly don't know what'll be in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great because then you're not jumping straight into like draft where you are having to build a deck and you're not really sure what you're looking for yet, as a new player, whereas with Jumpstart you're literally given the cards. And so you kind of figure out how to play with cards that are given to you. So it's a really great stepping stone, I think, into getting into, draft and then whatever format they decide that they want to get into.
Yes, and from Jumpstart, I have realized how much of a house the card Pursued Whale really is. I'm not gonna lie.
I played some Jumpstart in Bellevue and I had Predatory Doctor. So I had giant life gain and it destroyed. So it's I mean, I just think it's so fun, and then to like include it with like specific sets so that way there's not just draft but there's also Jumpstart is such a good way to bring new people into Magic.
For sure, for sure. I know that. Oh man, now I'm really blank. Magic Kids. Sorry, I know that when they were down in Dallas, they were using Jumpstart as a good starting off point. And there were actually a lot of people at DreamHack there back in June who had either never played Magic before and were just finding out about it for the first time, or were returning to the game and just wanted a refresher on how the game worked. And Jumpstart worked out so well for them for those purposes.
It's such less pressure, with like still being Magic, like you still having to like figure out which cards you need to play when and what cards work together well. And so there's still that, like you're still playing Magic, but it's a lot less pressure,
Oh yeah.
because it's luck of the draw really, as well with that. So
Much less
I'm just I'm
worried.
excited for that.
So much less worrying about sequencing. I'm just thinking about a game I played last night at the LGS for CDH, and it's like tap this, untap that, play this, sack that, then do this, 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 and this, and then do I win? So it's just, that's a lot of things you have to worry about. And 2 or 3 years ago, I certainly, as a newer player, never would have figured that sequencing out. And Jumpstart allows you to just get in, get the fundamentals, figure it out, and also there are some powerful cards in there too.
Oh
So
yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
maybe they're not the greatest for the Jumpstart meta. I'm looking at you, Lurking Predators. You're not great in certain matchups, but in Jumpstart. But I digress.
Yeah. Well, and with pre-cons, you think about EDH. Pre-cons, some of them are pretty like straightforward, but some of the more recent pre-cons have kind of been, I wouldn't say non-new user friendly, but they definitely, you have to know a little bit about what you're doing when you're playing them.
For sure, for sure. I think that as Wizards is trying to bring them to be more, new commander cards, new mechanics, new whatever, they are kind of focusing more on what can we do for the established players. And again, you're right. It is a bit more difficult now. I mean, obviously, I was getting started in spring of 2019, so just about when Commander 2019 was coming out. I think I got that right. And so it was Commander 2019. I forgot that we're not working with the Madden years. So, it's like 1 year ahead, right? But yeah, so it's just those Commander decks, I felt like, having later picked up the Merciless Rage precons, like, I probably could have played this back then. It's like it's straightforward enough. But yeah, now that we look at some of the newer ones, especially the commander decks that are coming out with the new sets, there is, I mean, as soon as you take a look at Tivit, it's like, what the heck is this?
Yeah, because like you compare that to one of the decks that I have. Well, and I optimized it, of course. But one of the decks I have that, like, if I'm playing with a group of people and someone needs a commander deck to play and they're new to Magic, I will hand them my Erabo, my cat tribal deck, because it's pretty straightforward. You just play cats and then they get bigger. And that was a pre-con. Originally, so I was like, oh, like cat tribal, and then there was like vampire tribal with Edgar Markov. But then we started adding things like the planeswalker pre-cons. You've got like Onimatu, who's like,
Yep. Let's see, C18, I think that was. With
yeah, which is,
Onimatu, Saheeli was in that one,
yeah,
Windgrace.
which are not, I mean, Windgrace can be a little like self-explanatory, but like Onimatu, like if you gave that to a new player and you're like, all right, play this deck, they would be so confused.
I think Estrid was honestly probably the biggest offender out of that entire group, just for complexity.
So it's, so, you know, pre-cons, it depends on the pre-con. So sometimes pre-cons are great to hand to new players and sometimes they're not. Whereas I feel like with Jumpstart, it's great for any new player.
For sure, for sure. This is also the reason why I do carry around an unaltered Card Kingdom Jalira Master Polymorphous pre-con wherever I go. Just in case, because it's fairly self-explanatory, make little tokens, make little creatures, sacrifice them to make big sea monsters. I mean, it is literally right there. And you know, the deck actually does pretty well just, you know, being an unsleeved $20-$30 pre-con. It's like it still does the thing, and it's fairly self-explanatory. You just have to explain you want to create a small creatures, sacrifice them with your commander. This good things happen. You profit off of it. It's like that is simple for new players, and that's really why I do agree Jumpstart is a great product for just getting new people in there without inundating you with a lot of the mechanics that you're not going to worry about when you're just getting started.
Absolutely. Yeah, my first deck that I played was my husband's Kalia deck. And that was a great deck to learn from because that's also a self-explanatory deck. Big
Oh, yeah.
angels. You put Kalia out and then you put out something from your hand and the whole deck is angels, demons, and so it's just, it was super easy to learn that way.
Little frightening on the other side of the table, though.
Yes, a little frightening on the other side of the table, but like, yeah, it really depends. So definitely, like, we got way off topic here, but yes, definitely the Jumpstart sets. I am excited for those, and I'm most excited for Dominaria and Brothers War. Unfinity, I'm like, eh. There's a couple cards from that that I'm interested in, but as a set overall, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, actually, what I was going to ask you, Nat, was were we ever on topic this whole time? I mean.
I'll just like keep talking and talking and then like start talking about something else. That's just how my brain works.
I mean, that's how I do the conversations on this podcast. So, I mean, it's all welcome here, right? But yeah.
So.
Yeah, got a lot of cool stuff coming up, a lot of interesting sets. I'm really excited for Brothers War, honestly, because, you know, the Vorthos head in me just wants to see exactly what they're going to be doing, because that goes all the way back pretty much to the beginning of Magic. We've got Urza, we've got Amishra, we've got a whole bunch of weird and with Dominaria United being before that, I just smell a time travel subplot. A lot of Karn, you know, it's like a lot of the good old, hopefully Rock'em Sock'em, Magic the Gathering kind of storyline coming up here. So we'll see.
I have a CEDH Urza deck, so I am anticipating Brothers War. Like what you got for me?
Oh man, it's really weird too. Just I'm making out on a side note for CDH, just like how many staple cards have come out just in the last year that, you know, how did you ever win without some of these cards? Seems to be kind of the way it's like before Thoracle, how did anyone win? It's like that's the weird thing is there's so many cards that just become ubiquitous, but maybe were overlooked when they first came out. It's just so weird stuff that even at the highest level of the format, certain cards, even commons and uncommons, can just warp the entire format around them. It's strange, but it's true.
It definitely changes as new cards come out, new cards get discovered. Definitely changes the way that the game is played.
I didn't know you actually had a CDH deck. That's cool.
Yeah, I do. I don't play it very often because I just more recently got into like online play, and I do have an IRL play group, but we do not play CEDH. We play
Gotcha.
casual. So I haven't really like been able to play it much just because I don't have anyone. But now that I'm playing more online, there will be more opportunities, so I might get back into it. But yeah, I haven't played CEDH in quite some time.
Hey, as long as you understand how to work Polytyrant, that's all that matters, right? I honestly, I don't even know how most of the combos work half the time. It's like, yeah, it resolves. Okay. So, I call myself a CDH player, but again, I still have a lot to learn about that side of the format. So, it's again, another thing for the listeners there. I know you've heard all the CDH content I've done lately. Just give it a try if you're interested. Honestly, I'm muddling my way through. That's why I play Godo a lot. It's easy to figure out. The cards are, I mean, it's a linear game plan. You know what you got to do. Just find a deck that works for you and just keep practicing because I still cannot figure out Blue Farm. I don't know how many times I've played that and just like I still don't get it. So, just things like that. And it's mostly sequencing, honestly. So just find something that's comfortable for you. Give it a try. It might not work. But just give it a try. I mean, I just played Winota last night. Having 9 Winota triggers on the stack feels pretty good, I can tell you. So anyway, we've hit our hour here, so I think I've taken enough of your time here, Nat. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It was great meeting you in person at Command Fest Bellevue. It was great having you on the show again tonight.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. You were so great to hang out with at Bellevue, and so great to talk to. So
Oh, I really appreciate that. I'm glad that that my work is getting noticed out there in the community. So it's definitely good to hear that.
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Yeah, before I let you go here, could you give another quick shout out to all the cool stuff that you're doing on your side of the content game?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on all social medias at Giraffinet, GIRAFFANAT. And I stream on Twitch. I also guest on streams. I am going to be part of a D&D campaign coming up here soon, where I'm playing a cute little forest gnome with my own little squirrel. And it's going to be adorable and great. Also, I'm going to be at MTG Summit in November. So that's kind of what I have coming up for me. So,
All right. Sounds great. And hopefully MTG Summit will be a really awesome event. Obviously, we're a couple of months out from that, but it sounds great. If I can find my way down to Salt Lake City, I will try to be there. So we'll see what happens.
I will have hopefully those the Drevi and the other Eldrazi vampire cosplays done by then. So I'll have some new cosplays to show
Awesome,
off.
awesome. If I do show up though, it's gonna be Tireless Tracker because I don't think I have time
That's,
to find a new costume.
that's so on brand for Tireless Tracker though.
Totally is.
So yeah, yep.
I still want to do a video at some point doing like a 500 miles song. I would walk 500 miles by the Proclaimers at some point and just it's like. If it wasn't for YouTube taking down copyrighted materials, I would have already done that by now. Basically, just walking around random places in costume, like, doing kind of the high, silly heist, like cartoonish high stepping and a bunch of weird stuff. Yeah, so it's like that fun stuff. But yeah, I will probably bring that because I honestly wouldn't even know where I would want to start on a second costume.
Yeah, I mean it's a few months, so you might think of something by then.
Yeah, I'm gonna need some ideas before then. I've got a few ideas in mind, but the problem is, like I said, is that how would I actually pull them off is another thing entirely. So, we'll see about that. But yeah, it sounds like it's gonna be a good time. If not, maybe I'll be down in Vegas for Magic 30. I don't know, honestly. It's a couple months out. I feel like it's hard to plan those things out this far in advance, oddly enough. So we'll see what happens. But maybe eventually we'll hang out again in person at one of these conventions.
Absolutely, I hope so.
All right. Well, if you're interested in hearing about any of the podcast, episodes that I have mentioned in or referenced in this particular episode, you can find the entire back catalog on the usual podcast outlets, as your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Podcast Addict, MTG Cast, and a million others. Castbox, Breaker, yeah, you know, millions of them. I honest Stitcher, yeah, there's so many of them out there. But again, as long as you found the Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine, where I talk about a whole bunch of random stuff, talk about cosplaying, talk about these episodes, and just in general, just being a very interesting, weird, nerdy jank brewer. So yeah, that's you get what you pay for when you follow me on Twitter, right? So you probably all know what to expect by now. Anyway, I'd like to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. It's another huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Nick S, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J Rowe, Geek Beardly, and Scoop Face for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And be on the lookout for more information about Lee EDH on August 7th and 14th to help friend of the show and patron Anomaly with family medical bills. So hopefully more information will be coming out soon. Obviously, I don't have anything at this particular moment, but I think that friends of the show, Nathan the Hermit Druid, as well as Veggie Wagon and Beth, the Queen of Cardboard, are all currently working on fundraising opportunities. I'm not really privy to these at the moment, but when more information is shared, I will let you all know about how you can help on that soon. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.